In verse 27, it says, prepare thy work without, and make it fit for thyself in the field, and afterwards build thine house. We looked at that proverb in a recent message for a different reason than the one I want to use it for today. Once again, I believe that there's a general principle found therein that hinges upon the word prepare in that particular proverb. In preparing for this message, I did a word search for the word on the word prepare and the derivations or derivations of that word throughout the scriptures. And to tell you the truth, I was quite surprised at the number of times that that word prepare or preparing or some derivation thereof is used. And the one thing that came through loud and clear from all of those passages was that Yahweh wants His people prepared. Time and time again, and again, the number of times that that word was used, it took me back even. Or one might put it, Yahweh wants a prepared people. But prepared for what? One may ask. Well, for as you read those passages, as they're found in the scriptures, for a great number of things. But let's just sum it up at this point, that Yahweh wants His people prepared for whatever may at any time come down the pike. Now, and that's still not very specific, is it? So let me ask you this. What is it that Yahweh would have or want us preparing for now? Right now. Now, on what, if I'd have been here and not sick last Sunday, would have been December 26, 1999, whereas today it's January 2nd, 2000. So I'm talking specifically right now. What is it that Yahweh would have us to be preparing for on January 2nd in the year 2000? Now, if that question was asked of the majority, from the majority of pulpits in today's churches, here's the answers I believe that the parishioners of those churches would probably provide. We need to be preparing for the Lord's return. Or we need to be preparing to go to heaven. Or we need to be preparing for the rapture. Don't you think those are probably the predominant answers that would be given to that question if across the land, and who knows, they may be asking that same question, what do we need to be preparing for? I'm almost certain, because from the behind the pulpits of those churches, that's what they've been telling their people for who knows how long. That those are the things, predominantly the things that they need to be preparing for. Although, think about this. Once you're a Christian, and hopefully living like a Christian, you know, I don't know what else you have to do to prepare for those particular things. Think about it. What do you do? If you're already a Christian and you're already living like a Christian, how can you prepare any more for the Lord's return or for going to heaven or for a quote-unquote rapture, as is so often and falsely taught across the land today? What else can you do to prepare other than just wait for it? I guess they don't think about that. Now, I doubt that there would be very many Christians who would answer that previous question that we need to be preparing for the next millennium. You say, well, I'm not going to live that long. I don't care. I don't think there'd be very many of them who would say, we need to be preparing ourselves for the next millennium here on earth. Don't think you'd get that answer very often at all. Now, those who would answer in the former ways would probably use the Bible text for their position as found in Matthew chapter 24. Let's turn there. Matthew 24 and verse 44. Actually, we'll begin with verse 36. Matthew chapter 24 and beginning with verse 36. We find here it says, of course, Christ is speaking. And he says, but of that day and hour knoweth no man. No, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and knew not until the flood came and took them all away, so also the coming of the Son of Man be. Then shall two be in the field, and one shall be taken, and the other left. Two women shall be grinding at the mill, and one shall be taken, and the other left. Watch therefore, for ye know not what hour your Lord doth come. But know this, that if the good man of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched, and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. Therefore be ye also ready or prepared, for in such an hour as you think not, the Son of Man cometh. Now, I think that would be the text, or at least one of the probably the primary text that they would use, those who would answer those that particular question on what we need to do, what we need to be preparing for on January 2nd, year 2000, or whatever other day it would maybe be asked. I think that's the text that would be used. Now, no matter what your eschatological view is, and if you're not familiar with that term, that means your future prophetic persuasion of things. No matter what your eschatological view is, and I guarantee that we could get into a great debate if we were so inclined as to whether this particular passage is yet to sometime in the future be fulfilled, or whether it was already fulfilled in A.D. 70. But I'm not going to do that. We could spend, and maybe someday we might, and we'll spend a whole series just doing that, I'm sure. But we're not going to do that in this particular message, because there's something I believe far more important for us to discuss in this particular chapter. Something that we should, hopefully, at least by the time we're done with this message, hopefully all agree upon, even if we can't agree upon our prophetic interpretations of this particular chapter. What I find amazing, especially with those who are still applying this particular admonition, the one I just read in Matthew 24, to a future event, is that they have missed the whole point of Christ's point. Now, I think it pretty much goes across the board, but it seems to play out especially with those who are still applying it to a future event, which I'm sure we have people here that still would probably do that. You don't know where I'm at. I may or may not. But the fact is, what I especially find amazing is that they've missed the whole point of Christ's point. Let's read on from where we stopped. We're picking it up with verse 44 and reading through verse 51. It says, "Therefore ye also be ready, for in such an hour as ye think not, the Son of Man cometh. Who then is a faithful and wise servant, whom his Lord has made ruler over his household, and give them meat in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Verily I say unto you, that he shall make him ruler over all his goods. But and if that evil servant shall say in his heart, My Lord delayeth his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow servants, and to eat and drink with the drunken, the Lord of that servant shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of, and shall cut him asunder, and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Now, what was it that in that part of Matthew chapter 24, in those last verses, what was it that Yeshua was describing as being ready and prepared? Simply put, you go back and read it for yourself if you don't see it yet. But simply put, doing His will here on earth. That's what's being discussed in that passage. That's the point of Christ that everybody seems to be missing. Everybody's talking about being prepared, but they miss what being prepared is all about. Get rid of the chapter subdivision. And Matthew 25 then continues and elaborates upon the primary point in Matthew chapter 24. Matthew 25 begins, "Then shall the kingdom of heaven be likened." Again, the chapter subdivisions and the verse subdivisions were added at a later date just for the sake of studying and so forth. It just continues. The flow then just continues right out of Matthew 24. What we have today is Matthew 24. Right on into what we have today is Matthew 25. And it says, "The kingdom of heaven shall be likened." And note first that it's the kingdom of heaven, not the kingdom of in heaven, like so often is being preached today. In fact, what's described in Matthew chapter 25 is the kingdom of heaven here on earth. That's what's being described. Why do I say that? Well, because the kingdom of heaven is likened in Matthew chapter 25 to things that take place on earth, not in heaven. Again, that seems to be completely missed by the majority of Christendom today. Sadly, by the majority of the preachers preaching behind the majority of pulpits today. And what a consequence we have paid because of it. Matthew 25, for example, Matthew 25, verses 1 through 13, and think about this, compares the kingdom of heaven with the preparation or lack thereof. Now, that's interesting in and of itself, that the kingdom of heaven can even sometimes be compared with the lack of preparation. The kingdom of heaven, in the first 13 verses, is compared with the preparation or the lack thereof of the 10 virgins. Most of you are aware of what that story is about or what that parable is about. Not, think about this, not with what happens to the five prudent virgins. I don't know if they're prudent virgins or not. Hopefully we've got some prudent virgins around. And in this day and age, that's even hard to find. But it's not comparing it with what happens to the five prudent virgins after they've prepared. Matthew 25, going on, verses 14 through 30, compares the kingdom of heaven with the work or lack thereof of the three servants given the varying talents and what they did or did not do with them. And the chapter ends with a discussion concerning the care or the lack of strangers here on earth, not in heaven. It compares the heaven of earth with, the kingdom of heaven with what's going on or not going on here on earth with God's servants. In other words, the kingdom of heaven is compared to what we are doing or not doing here on earth. And whether we're doing or not doing the will of the Father here on earth will obviously dictate the state of the kingdom here on earth at any particular time. Most of the people look around and they say, man, if this is the kingdom, who wants it? Well, I think God is looking down and saying, if you're the servants of the kingdom, who wants you? Because it's in the state that it's in here on earth, not because the kingdom doesn't exist, as I've preached I don't know how many times, and you'll hear me continue to harp on it, but because of what we either are doing or the lack thereof. That determines the state of the kingdom. Now, what I find especially interesting about these two chapters, Matthew 24 and 25, and with those Christians, or with those whose Christian lives are predicated upon an imminent return of Christ. I don't know the last 2,000 years well enough. I know the last probably 200 years pretty well, and I suspect it's probably the same, probably pretty much as far back as you go or as far back as Christ's ascension into heaven. Maybe not quite that far, because I think they had a hold on what was going on a lot better than we do today. But at least at some point, as we came forward to where we're at today in history, at some point, everybody, or quote-unquote everybody, there's always been a few who haven't, who have maybe had their heads screwed on a little bit tighter than the rest. But nearly everyone has been looking and waiting for an imminent return of Christ right then. It was no different in Y1K than it was just in Y2K. It was the same kind of preaching, the same kind of doomsday discussions, all of that was going on. They had all of these guys that had figured out the prophecies and how they were going to be fulfilled at that particular time. It wasn't any different. And so what I find especially interesting with those whose Christian lives are predicated upon an imminent return of Christ, or a soon-to-happen, any-moment-now rapture, is that they are not, if you think about it, they are not all that much different from the evil servant described in the latter part of Matthew 24, who predicated his life, gets this, who predicated his life on a detained or delayed return of his master. Remember the one who went and beat his servants because he didn't think he was coming back soon? Isn't that interesting? Now, for the most part, today's Christians are not taking advantage of, that is, beating up their fellow man in business deals, etc., or whatever. Or at least I hope they're not. That certainly isn't always the case either. But they're not, maybe not fulfilling the same kind of scenario with the wicked servant in that regard. But nevertheless, for those who are living their lives based upon an impending return of Christ, or and then being taken off to heaven, either by his return or through some imaginary rapture, they may not be making matters worse here on earth, and yet even that's probably debatable, but they sure aren't doing anything to make it better. And so you tell me how much difference there is between those who are looking for an imminent return of Christ and that the wicked servant in Matthew 24 who thought his master would be tamed or deterred. In other words, it's just two examples of the pendulum swing that result in nearly the same effect. Listen to me. Being ready or being prepared for the Lord's return, whatever that means to the Lord, is not found in anticipating and discussing and preaching about the Lord's return, as Christians have been doing for nearly two millennia at this point in time. And as a consequence, who have lost or simply flat out given away the kingdom in the process. If you think about it, such Christians who are only preaching about, talking about, or only excited about the Lord's return, again, are not all that much different from the servant who was given the one talent and then who went and buried it. Is there much difference between the two? In other words, they aren't any different than the servant who didn't use what God had given him to further his master's kingdom. Excited about it. Isn't that precisely what many Christians are doing today? You have been, think about it. I mean, that was just a parable of a master and his servant who had been given a talent, and he wasted it, he squandered it, he went and buried it with some foul excuse. But think about it. We've been given, how much worse when we've been given, talking about Christianity as a whole, when we've been given the greatest of all gifts, what are we doing with it? Well, essentially, we're burying it. If we're not utilizing and taking advantage of and doing something with it for the master, for our king's sake, we've buried it. No matter how excited about it. And oh, no question about it. They are excited. You know, there's full of excitement out there in the Christian world. They're excited about the gift, and but they're not doing anything with the gift. Except to be excited about it. I don't see a whole lot of difference between the two extremes. Listen to me, being ready, being prepared for the Lord's return is found not only in being excited and talking about the Lord's return, it is found in being about the Father's business. Occupying till He comes, or because He came, depending on your eschatological position. And to be quite frank, as you probably, if you've been, especially those of you here in this congregation who've been around my preaching long enough, you probably already figured this out. To be quite frank, I'm not all that much concerned with what your eschatology is, but rather with what you're doing with or because of your eschatological persuasion. And by the way, and I won't guarantee this very often, and some people would maybe think I'm even going on a limb on this one. But by the way, and much more importantly, I guarantee you the same is true about Yahweh as well. He is not so much concerned about your eschatological persuasion, whether you've got Revelation all figured out or not, but what you're doing because of your eschatological persuasion. I guarantee that one. Now, I know that as we prepare to enter the 21st century, and that's probably a poor choice of words for two different reasons, at least two different reasons. First, because very few people are preparing for the 21st century. And secondly, and I think I heard some discussion between Sunday school and this already, and so you already have figured this one out, but because midnight, January 1st, 2000, was not the beginning of the next millennium. If you haven't already done it, you do the calculations yourself and you'll figure it out. The new millennium commences at midnight, January 1st, 2001. The Christian era upon which our calendars are based did not begin with the year zero. It began on January 1st in the year one. Add 2,000 years to that and you get January 1st, 2001, not January 1st, 2000. Which makes my next point even that much more interesting, because as we, and talking generically about all of us as Christians, as we quote-unquote prepare to enter the quote-unquote next millennium, prophecies and prophetic interpretations abound regarding the return of Christ and the rapture and the kingdom based upon erroneous calculations to begin with. All of these, I mean, I don't know if you've heard them. If you're on the internet, and I get all kinds of material sent to me anyway, so much that I can't read the majority of it, but enough to see what's going on. You know, I browse through, breeze through a lot of it pretty quickly, but the you wouldn't believe. I mean, and not, I guess just not in Christianity, but in the secular world as well. All of these prophetic persuasions, and the vast majority of them were based on the wrong calculations to begin with. At the best, such interpretations are 1 year off. Personally, I think that they're much further than just 1 year off. Than just 1 year off when it comes to their particular prophetic interpretations. That's about as much eschatology as I'm going to give you in this message. But I don't think, personally, I think they're a whole lot further off than one year. Now, if I'm proven wrong on that, you can come and tell me I was wrong and rub my nose in it. That's fine. The Lord will already have rubbed my nose in it. So you can come and do it too. But personally, I believe outside the natural progression of things, good or bad, by the way, they don't always have to be bad. They don't have to remain bad. They will, I'll guarantee you this, as long as we continue in this current persuasion of how we look at the kingdom and our place in it and our responsibility with it and how we currently, for the most part, predominantly look at the Lord's return and this and that, it's not going to get much better. But it doesn't have to remain that way. And that's why I will continue preaching and harping on this particular subject until I, hopefully, in my life, see things change. But anyway, personally, I believe outside the natural progression of things, good or bad, that the year 2000 and the year 2001 are going to be just like the year 1999 and every year previous for the past 2,000 years. For people who are looking for the imminent return, they're going to gulp and gasp and gag over that. But that's, and if you don't like it, you know, I'll put up with you. You put up with my where I'm at eschatologically right now. To tell you the truth, I'm not even sure where I'm at completely. I'm still working on that. But that's where I'm at. And whether we get closer to having the kingdom here on earth, the kingdom as God intends it to be, His will on earth as it is in heaven. And again, I emphasize and I say to you again, you think how perfect living is right now in heaven, and that's how God wants it here on earth. And whether we're going to get closer to the kingdom here on earth as it already is in heaven will depend on what Christ, and that's right, isn't that what it depends upon? Upon what Christ finds us Christians doing here on earth, now and in the years to come. Everybody else is looking for the fact that it's going to depend upon Christ. And when he returns and when he comes back, well, look what's happened to the kingdom in the last 2,000 years as a result of that kind of thing. Yes, I believe it depends on Christ. Everything depends upon Christ. And in this case, it depends upon what Christ finds us as Christians doing here on earth. Whether we get about the Father's business or not. Now, if I'm wrong, Yahweh has more immediate plans than that, it doesn't matter. Because either way, we are not to be just waiting for our Father. Once again, about our Father's business here on earth, whether it's soon or whether it's down the road a long ways yet. That's what we're to be doing. We're to be about our King's business. Now, maybe he's only your Savior. Or maybe he's only your Lord. I'm going to tell you, he's my King. He's my only King. And anybody who's not under his authority is subverting his authority has no authority, as far as I'm concerned. We're to be about our King's business. That is, and I know sometimes it's just in little, small, incremental steps. And don't think that that isn't valid. Don't think that that cannot have a great effect. How do you think they took the kingdom from us? In little, small, incremental steps. I've shared it with you before. I remember so clearly because my dad doesn't normally think in these realms. He's just a man who raised horses for the most part and was involved with them and the cowboy of sorts. And I remember one when I was 18 years old, him telling me that if the communists had tried to do with this country what to brought in one swift move, what had happened since the time he was my age, he said we'd have never stood for it. But they've taken it one little step at a time. We may be able only to do just a little bit. But don't think that that's not important. And I think those little incremental steps, the more ground we take, as we go further into history, the greater and the bigger the steps become. Now, we're to be about the King's business, our King's business, dominionizing here on earth, establishing His laws to the best of our ability, and it begins maybe only in our own households, but establishing His laws as the laws of the land. Or at least working toward that end, if not for our generation, then once again, at least for our children's generation or our children's children's generation. In other words, there is probably nothing special. I hate to tell you that. I know we get to the first of every new year, and especially the new of a quote-unquote millennium, and it's supposed to be, whoo! I mean, you saw the firecrackers if you watched what was going across the world, and you're supposed to be all excited. I don't want to put a damper on it, but let me tell you something. I don't think there's probably nothing special about January 1st, 2000, or will there be anything special, extraordinary about January 1st, 2001? They will both be just 24-hour periods of time. That will be preceded by another 24-hour period of time, and Lord willing, that will precede another 24-hour period of time. The dates that have been given to them are something assigned to them by man, not God. Think about that as we switch the tape here. The dates, January 1st, the year 2000, or the year 2001, are just dates that have been given to them or assigned to them by man, not God. And talk to different people. Even the accuracy of those dates, not talking about the millennium, whether it's 2000 or 2001, but just the accuracy of our whole calendar is debatable. Who knows how far we may be off. The whole idea of January 1st, 2000, or January 1st, 2001, that's man's idea. That's something man assigned to it. It's just another, take away the titles of the month and the names of the days and this millennium or that year or whatever it is, and what do you have? A 24-hour period that God has given. Now listen to me. Those dates are like all other dates. Like all other days that will be or already have been 20, speaking of whether it's January 1st, 2000, which has already passed, or January 1st, 2001, will be or already have been 20, like all other dates, will be or have been 24 hours given to us by God to do something with. That's what makes those dates important. So, now we'll get down to the rubber, where the rubber meets the road. What do you plan to do? What are you preparing to do with those 24 hours? It's true, we may be facing some computer failures. Keep in mind that I was planning to preach this on the 26th, had I not been ill. It still applies. We're still going to face some computer failures as time goes on. And the world certainly wasn't hit with this big catastrophe of being bitten by the bug. I will tell you, I was. My computer got hit. Now, it was a comparatively little bite, but I've got some problems as of yesterday that I've got to find some solutions to. But praise God, you know, he's in control, and he always gets the laugh, at least on somebody. You know, somebody's always wrong, and there was a whole bunch of people wrong on this one, and he got the last laugh. But it's true, we will be facing computer problems in the future. We're going to face some technological problems. It's inevitable, whether Y2K related or not. And it's true, and probably very likely, that the next or at least the beginning of the next millennium may prove to be one or prove to hold more persecutions for Christians than we have seen previously, especially probably for our brand of type of Christians. So what? It doesn't change the fact that whatever time that God has given us to live in, or whatever circumstances or conditions that he's given us to live under, that we are to live each and every day of our lives to the best of our ability for him and his will and his kingdom. And you can't separate the three of those. You cannot live for him without living for his will, and you cannot live for his will unless you're living for his kingdom here on earth. And by so doing, by preparing for the next millennium, even if it is a year ahead of schedule, we can then help to make the next millennium ours rather than the Antichrist. If we'll just realize that God has given us each and every one of those 24 hours, trying to make it a special, rather than trying to make it, and there will be more than one special 24-hour periods where God will do some mighty and great things. But rather than always looking for God to do it, if we will realize this is a 24-hour period right now, January 2nd, the year 2000, for us to do something with, we will help to make the next millennium ours rather than the Antichrist. As I pointed out in the earlier series of messages, whether the future is ours or not depends upon what we do with today and tomorrow and every other 24-hour period that God gives us for Christ and his kingdom and our children. And by the way, that extra year just gives us 365 more 24-hour periods of time to make just that much more certain that the next millennium is ours. Don't be astonished to find out we're not yet in the millennium. Man, I got 365 more days. Six. It's a leap year. Hey, hallelujah, we got an extra one in there. Another 24-hour period of time. Well, you know, think about it. If Christians only had that mindset, flat out the proof is in the pudding again, they don't. Because how different it would be. Because we would be in control today. We wouldn't have the outlaws and criminals making the despicable laws that we have in this nation today. If Christians had only served their king as well as the Antichrist served theirs. What should we be doing to prepare for the next 1,000 years? Well, the same thing that Christians should have been doing for the last 1,000 years. Seeking first His kingdom, His righteousness, and His will in our lives and in the lives of everyone around us. Now, that's just an introduction. I intended to go somewhere completely else when I first started this preparation on this message, and I only got through the introduction. In the next message, I intend, Lord willing, to get more specific with what preparing we should be making, what preparations, excuse me, we should be making for the next millennium. More specific. And I'd like some prayers about that, because we need to really understand. We can't just talk in generalities. We need to get specific with what God intends us to be doing to prepare for the next 1,000 years. So, till then, remember, not one of us lives for himself, and not one dies for himself. For if we live, we live for the Lord. Or if we die, we die for the Lord. Therefore, whether we live or die, we are the Lord's. Romans 14, verses 7 and 8. Let's stand. Our Heavenly Father, we are grateful to you, and we thank you and praise you, Father, for the period of time that you've given us to live in. Lord, at least from our perspective, there hardly seems a time that could be more exciting than where we're at now. Or at least it's exciting, Father, from the standpoint if we'll see that we've got a job before us to do, and if we'll only do it. Father, awaken your people. I pray that this message, or Father, if there's a servant of yours that can present it in a way that's more useful and that can be more effective, then raise up that servant, Lord, to preach this kind of message, Lord, that would awaken the church world. Awaken the Christians across this land that they can truly make a difference, Lord, as they anticipate and wait for your return. Help them to see that they have a responsibility here on earth, not just a responsibility to wander off in their mind into heaven. Father, help us truly to be the salt of the earth and the light to this world, that we can make a difference now, or at least, Lord, in the lives of our children and children's children. Let it be so, and let it be to your glory. We ask it. Pray, Father, your blessings now upon this message and upon, Father, this day and every 24-hour period of time that you grant us in life. Let us use it to your glory, praise, and honor.